Joining us now, always a pleasure to bring on this guest, talking to this audience down here in South Alabama, but represents folks northernish Alabama in Coleman, Alabama, State Senator Garland Gudger in Montgomery right now. Senator, how are you?
I'm doing well. I like the word northernish. That's pretty good. I haven't heard that one. But yeah, north central Alabama to northwest Alabama I represent. But thank you for having me on the show as always. It's always a pleasure.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to come on. Let's get right into it. First off, the big news of the day, obviously, is this: the gaming bill goes down. Fell two votes short. Just didn't have. I think a lot of people had questions about a duopoly and all of those aspects. But here we are, a few days later, and your name has come up. You're on this bill with Senator McClendon and Senator Marsh to go at it alone with a standalone lottery. Talk about that, if you would.
My constituents is very clear to me when I went home every weekend going through this lottery / gaming bill that we voted down, that they really prefer just to have a lottery vote. That was very simple, and that they would be able to read and understand instead of the 100 pages of the enabling legislation in the constitutional amendment. So I came back. I went straight to Dale to tell him this is where I stand. I don't want to surprise you. I want to make sure you know that before we hit the floor. That's the last thing you want as a legislator to think you have the votes and you don't. So I wanted to make sure he knew that up front that morning. Senator McClendon came to me and said, hey, I've got a lottery bill. If this fails, Dale has talked about getting out of committee. I said, that's funny. I've got one too. I didn't know you were doing that. So what we thought was the best thing to do is I co-sponsored his bill. He co-sponsored my bill. We put both of them in. And hopefully with the blessings of Dale getting out of committee, we will see which one is the best for the people and put that out. And frankly, I think that either one gets out is fine. I think my constituents want a chance to vote on the lottery, and I want to be able to give them that.
Well, reading through at least the McClendon bill, there's language in there about video lottery terminals at five locations. That's not, I guess, casino gaming, but it seemed maybe a little different than the traditional simple lottery.
Yeah, if you looked at my bill that I put in, mine does not have that language in there. Mine is a simple paper lottery, which I think is the most simple form of what the people want to vote on. And my bill is a constitutional amendment, and it is just for paper, which means it's scratch-off tickets at like a convenience store or a retail outlet, or lotto tickets that you would get through a vending machine or at a convenience store. And then from that, you still have multi-state play, which is the Powerballs that you see in Tennessee and Georgia and Mississippi and Florida. And I think it is as simple as possible for the people to have a vote. Do you want a lottery? Yes or no? And if it comes back yes, then we can be able to come back, have the enabling legislation, and place that money where the people want, which in my bill it states that it would go to scholarships for post-secondary, two-year and four-year, and then for mental health teachers and through K-12.
Does this, I guess these all kind of are going to go through the tourism committee? Is that where you expect this the action to be?
Yeah, so what happens is in the Senate, our rules are a little different than the House. And so any type of gaming has to go through tourism committee, which our chairman is Dale Marsh. And that's why he would have to give his blessings and put his fingerprint on either one of our bills beforehand. And if the people in the Senate, or that my colleagues in the Senate, want the people to have a chance to vote on McClendon's bill, then I'm truly, that's what we agree with. That's fine. If it's my bill, then that's fine too. I'm not pushing that mine's better than McClendon's bill. I'm not saying that his is better than mine. I'm just saying that I would like to have the people a chance to vote, but it will go through the tourism committee, both of those bills.
Senator, the question is this, though, and it always comes up, and I'm sure you're well aware, is that when you change the Alabama Constitution and you go from just having games of skill legal to games of chance legal, that the Porch Creek Indians, the three gaming facilities, that could open the floodgates for the proliferation of gaming there. They could have gambling, and then you have the existing dog track casinos. They will be at a competitive disadvantage, and that seems to be where we're always hung up on the lottery and just getting the lottery done. Have you given that thought? Are you concerned about that?
You know, as my second life of politics since not 2004 until now, I've realized that it is hard for us to pass a bill that says, okay, we're going to start with A and go all the way to Z in one bill. Usually you have to pass one bill, then the next year come back and adjust that to what was best for the people, then the next year adjust that to what's best for the people. I think that my bill currently is very simple. It's very straightforward. There's very transparent so everyone can see it. And then if we start talking about gaming and how that affects the federal regulations that regulate the Poarch Creek Indians, I don't think either one of our bills, mine or Senator McClendon's, ever gets through. And I think the key for right now is, do the people want to vote on the lottery, yes or no? And if you do, let's put a bill out there that does that. And then as we go forward, I think we all realize that the state needs to compact with the Poarch Creek Indians to be able to not only have them in some type of regulation or commission or a gaming commission to regulate them, but that also we start looking at what are they giving back to the state, whether that's taxes or how we can work together on a license fee. I want to take one moment of privilege and just say that I would like to make sure everyone knows that Dale Marsh had worked his rear end off, and I was so proud of to be his colleague and him going through this for the last 9 months trying to get this bill together. He did an outstanding job. I hate that it fell short for him for two votes, even though in the end, if that's what we think the people that we represent wanted and everybody voted their conscience, I think this, at the end of the day, is what happened. But I just wanted to make sure I put that word out there.
Yeah, he had been working on this for a while. I guess he is the first that I've seen since we've had this sort of, where you have these entities with what I think is negotiating leverage over the state with the existing facilities. He's the first to really have gotten them all in the same room together and, talked about, well, what will it take to get you to get you on board here? But unfortunately, that just, you cut out the legislature at some, I would say they were cut out, but they just couldn't get on board with it altogether.
There's not many people in this state or in the state house that can bring all of the operators together, get them to agree on one bill. None of them were extremely happy with it, which means it's probably a good piece of legislation. In the end, it just didn't have enough votes to muster through the Senate. And I hate that. I just think that a lot of people are looking on this bill now, the longer that it stayed out there. We're just not ready for casinos. They were ready for the lottery. And so I think that's the difference in where we originally started to at the end result voting the other day. But there's not many people that can do that, but I give props to Dale Marsh, Senator Dale Marsh, for being able to do that. There's only a few people in the state of Alabama that can do it, and he is one of them.
Well, let me ask you this, and this maybe there's some maybe this is legitimate or not legitimate at all, but it never seemed to be much discussion in the lower chamber about any of this, and I kind of wondered if maybe you or some of your colleagues, knowing that in the back of your mind that, yeah, you could get this controversial bill out of the Senate, but you don't know what the future held in store in the House, might that make you reluctant to vote for it? Because if it's unpopular, you voted for it, but it's all for naught, then why would you walk the plank, let's say, on a controversial bill? And so I guess the follow-up to that would be, What do you think the prospects are for somebody in the House carrying one of the two bills you guys have in the Senate down there?
You know, my father always told me, without communication, there's no potential for growth. And if you're not communicating with the lower house on any bill, it doesn't matter if it was Dale Marsh's bill or mine or McClendon's currently, you're not going to have the potential for it to pass, period. And I don't know how my colleagues in the Senate felt and if that was a factor in where they were and if there was communication there. But I do know that the leadership in the Senate were talking with the leadership in the House and the executive branch, bringing all of this together as far as the mass and volume of votes that are needed to pass that lower chamber. You know, I can't really speak to that, but I knew there were a lot of questions just getting it through the Senate, much less the House. So, you know, can't speak for other people, but I think if the leadership got behind it and the executive branch, then there has a lot better chance of passing. Were they behind it? You know, I'm not sure. It never got to that level, but everybody would have to speak their own mind on how that was a factor in their vote in the Senate.
It does seem, though, that the governor's office, the executive branch, was behind Senator Marsh. She, at least reportedly, was, you know, maybe putting in a good word for this bill. Do you, I know the governor doesn't really play a big factor in a constitutional amendment process, but have you gotten any feedback from the executive branch about how this might be done?
Well, I obviously cannot speak for the governor or the chief of staff, Joe Bonner, or her office, but I know that there was communication with the governor. I know there's communication with Joe Bonner. I do know that both of them were putting in a good word for this. Obviously, they released a statement right before the vote on the floor of the Senate that they were positively going and getting behind Dale Marsh's bill. And that made an influence also on a positive factor for some of the people to vote yes on the floor. That might have been a no, or maybe, or could have been a maybe. So I think that that communication was there. I think that there was still a lot of things that needed to be ironed out as the set of enabling legislation came out Friday around 6 o'clock p.m. We had to vote Tuesday when we got on the floor. So there wasn't much time for us, especially being at home and trying to, for me, work my small business, take care of my two boys, go watch them play ball, be with my wife and my family. It was just hard to be able to get through all of the legislation. But when I got through it, by the time I got on the floor, I told Dale exactly where I was to begin with. Because without your word up front and letting people know exactly where you are, like I said, you don't want to be surprised when you don't have the votes if someone's counting on you. So do I think that the answer your question, the governor has to be behind whatever bill passes? I do. I think that she has a huge influence, not only on the people of the state of Alabama, obviously, but the legislators that listen to her. And she has been a champion for a lot of things in this state, and she would have to be a champion, I believe, for even the lottery for this to pass both houses. So I'm anxious to see where the Senate goes next Tuesday when tourism, the meeting on tourism actually will be Wednesday for committee. And then if it goes forward, then we'll see if the governor gets behind it at that point.
Joined by State Senator Garland Gutcher here for just a couple more minutes before we have to let him go and attend to the business of the state. Senator, moving on to some other things real quick. Another big topic, and maybe it's kind of been on the back burner now that we've been really focused, hyper-focused on gambling and gaming and lotteries. But doing something with the COVID-19 response, looking back at the last year, and seeing if we need to tweak some of the existing statutes or how the bureaucracy functions, maybe roll back some of the executive authority. What are you hearing on that? And where do you think what do you think the prospects are getting something substantive done this session?
And there's a lot of communication and buzz on the Senate floor from Senator Watley's bill that is coming through that limits the Department of Public Health officer, and then also the governor's continuously to expand the emergency proclamations that she, like where we've been in for the last 11 and a half months now. And so that's a pretty major deal right now. Will Barfoot's bill, Senator Will Barfoot from Montgomery, he's got a bill that we could call ourselves back into session. If we get here, two-thirds of the legislature has to vote that this is a reason that we need to call ourselves back in. There's been a small business bill dropped by Jamie Keel that talks about there can't be chosen winners and losers, small business and churches. You have to be able, if one business is open, and for example, selling sporting goods, then any business that sells sporting goods should be able to be open as long as they have the protective PPE and safe distancing from each other. But there's been a lot of response to COVID through these bills that are coming through the House and through the Senate. And I think it's a very popular issue with constituents back home because it has affected their lives and all of their lives. I personally have a bill coming through that SB 307 for patients' rights in hospitals and nursing homes. This bill is only intended to enhance the great job that the hospitals and nursing home workers and nurses and doctors and administration has done. But it allows people at the end of life care with compassionate care under an emergency proclamation to be able to be with a loved one. Everyone has a heart-wrenching story of they had been married for 50 years or know someone that has been married forever or a family member that passed away in the hospital through COVID and they did not have a family member or a patient advocate with them. And it just pulls your heart out. And the patient needs that just to have a peace as they pass on, and then the same thing, there needs to be closure for the people that are left behind. And a lot of times we weren't able to do that. And again, that's not the hospital's fault. There was a lot of mandates that came down from the federal regulations from CMS and MMS. But this bill would help relieve that so that family members would have a way to get in to see their loved ones.
Senator, we got to leave it there, but we appreciate your time this morning, and best of luck. Stay safe there in Montgomery.
I sure do appreciate it. Always a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. That was State Senator Garland Gudger.